This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Wednesday. And it is time to check out. Meaning it's time to check out of current events and the news of the day. I will get back to talk about these things. The police officer who's an illegal. We're going to talk about 4,000 troops parked off the coast of Venezuela. We're going to talk about Adam Schiff maybe going to prison. We're going to do some emails. We're going to do other things. But all that is going to have to wait because now it is time to do history. I don't know how long it's going to take. Maybe a half hour, maybe an hour. I don't know. It's not a longer one like the other ones have been, but let me ask you something. Have you ever been fascinated with the origin of words, of terms that are commonly used? I'm rarely fascinated by it, I'll be honest with you, as in I don't want to look into it, but then I'll discover the origin of a term and I'll be all, wow. That's amazing. Have you ever used the word deadline? I'm on a deadline. I have a deadline. I'm on a deadline. Would you like to hear where that term came from? You're about to find out today. Now, this is a Civil War story. And so we have to do quite a bit of background, or at least a little bit of background, to kind of set up the situation here. We are going to discuss Andersonville. It was actually officially Camp Sumter. No, it's not Fort Sumter, but Camp Sumter. But it's known by the name of the small town in Georgia that is close to where it was located, Andersonville. It was a Confederate prisoner of war camp. That is going to be the subject we're going through today. But before we get to there, let's talk about kind of the war, the way it went, the way it was set up, and what was happening at the time. So, obviously, you know, North facing the South Civil War. A lot of people don't know, unless you've looked into it, unless you've kind of expanded beyond a little more than you'll probably get in a history class, they don't know that the South never had much of a chance in the Civil War. That was because of logistics and manpower. They didn't have the industry. They didn't have the wealth. I would actually compare it to what we've talked about before when it comes to Japan versus America in World War II. Japan had an excellent front line, you know, great Navy, great fighter planes initially, great troops. They were really good. In a lot of ways, they were better than we were initially. But the problem is if you are better, but you can't build more stuff. You don't have enough stuff to make more stuff, more ships, more planes, more bullets, more everything. Things are going to break. If you can't replace it, you will lose the longer it goes on. You can't win the longer it goes on. And you can be worse. You can be a worse fighter. You can even, in some ways, have worse stuff than someone else does. But if you can just build more stuff and replace more stuff, then if it goes on long enough, you'll win. If you have a great cutting edge and nothing behind it, you better win quickly, fast. Because if it goes on, because time is your enemy. I'll put it to you that way. That's exactly what the South, pretty much what the South was facing when it comes to the Civil War or the War of Northern Aggression, depending on where you're listening to the sound of my voice. The story was, in the beginning, and this, I don't know that you can really debate this. Of course, you can debate anything, but the South had better military leaders. They had better generals. Robert E. Lee, in particular, but I mean, so many under him, Stonewall Jackson, so many others. Remember, Lincoln's first pick to lead the Union Army was not McClellan. He wanted Robert E. Lee. He's like, I want that guy. And Lee said, no, I'm fighting for the other side. Sorry, best of luck. They had great leadership. They had an excellent excellent initial crop of troops for the simple fact the South was more rural than the North. It wasn't that there weren't rural areas in the North, but the North was going to be more bigger cities, bigger industrial areas. And rural troops have always made better troops. I don't care if that offends you. I know there are a million exceptions, so don't email me. I'm from Brooklyn, and I know. I know there are exceptions, but this is just simply easy to explain. Rural troops go into the military already 10 steps ahead of the urban troop because he's more comfortable with firearms. He's more comfortable sleeping outdoors. He's just more comfortable with a lot of things that are part and parcel for the military. When I was in the Marine Corps, we would do things like we would go out to the field and do field ops. Well, I grew up hunting and fishing and camping in the mountains of Montana. That's what we were always doing. I grew up shooting with my dad. Firearms were, I was familiar with them. And it wasn't that my buddy from Chicago, my buddy from Chicago, it wasn't like that he wasn't just as good or even a better Marine than I was. I started out so far ahead of him, he'd never even slept. There are bugs. Yeah, there are bugs. We're outside. But of course there are bugs. It's just different. The South had better troops initially. But as the war progressed, the South simply couldn't replace those troops and couldn't, more importantly, and this is going to come into play in our story, they couldn't replace the stuff you need to fight a war. You know, I'll tell you something right now. If you were in a situation where it was just you and your mother, you're in a bunker, very safe, secure bunker. And you have all the food and water you could ever want. And who are the baddest people on the planet? Delta Force. We use Delta Force. And Delta Force showed up outside of your bunker trying to get you out. They didn't have much food. They didn't have much water. They better get you out quickly or you know you're going to defeat Delta Force. Even the toughest guy on the planet has to eat or he dies. Even the toughest guy on the planet has to drink water or he dies. The South started to lose. Now let's go to Richmond, Virginia. Richmond, Virginia was the capital of the South during the Civil War. And there's all kinds of fighting that take place around Richmond, Virginia. We're going to focus right now for our purposes on the year 1863, though. Okay, don't worry about the date. It's not important. But the year is 1863, and there's all this fighting around Richmond, Virginia. Now, we, because we are so blessed to be here in this country, we don't necessarily understand the logistics of food. We'll just focus on food for right now. We don't think about the logistics of it, right? Because what do you do when you want something to eat? You go down to a restaurant. Or you go to the grocery store, or I realize it'd be a bodega if you're in New York City listening to me or something like that, but there's a store close to you where you go buy meat and eggs and cheese and bread and things. Okay, all right, you got me there. But where did that food that's in your store come from? Well, see, this is why we don't realize how spoiled we are. Everywhere. I can go down to H-E-B. H-E-B is a huge grocery store chain in Texas. I can go down to H-E-B. I have one 15 minutes from my house. I can go down to H-E-B right now, and I can pick up ingredients, food ingredients from not just all over the country, all over the world. I can grab an avocado from Mexico. I can go get olive oil from Italy. I can go get, if I want to spend the money, I can walk into H-E-B in Texas and access food items that come from all over the planet. That is not how most human beings have lived throughout history. Most food throughout history, because of the logistics of getting food to and fro, most food throughout history is locally sourced. Locally sourced. So what's this mean? I mean, today we have kind of an older way of thinking when it comes to where do you get the best this or best that? Like, where can you get the best lobster roll? Most people would say, well, you got to go to Maine. It's where the lobster is. Oh, you got to go to Boston. It's where the lobster is. I just went to Boston. I ate a lobster roll. Best lobster roll I've ever had in my life is in a parking lot here in Houston, Texas. Why? There's a place, a food truck here. They fly in fresh Maine lobster every morning. I can have a lobster roll just as fresh as your Maine lobster right here. Right here. It was not always like that. You have to get local stuff. We'll go back to Virginia. We'll go back to Richmond here in a minute and get to Andersonville. Before we get to Andersonville, speaking of our history, those pictures you have of your parents, I know, maybe even grandparents or gosh, great-grandparents if you're lucky, that is your history. That is really important, not just for you to be able to see those, but for your children and for their children and for their children to see those, to see you. You know, I will tell you this. I would love to see pictures of my great-grandparents, my great-great-great-grandparents. I don't even know what they look like. Legacy Box is how you preserve those memories for generations. I don't tell you about Legacy Box for you. Yes, it is nice to be able to look at pictures, your home movies on your phone. It is nice. It's nice to have access to those things. This is not about you. This is about my kids. This is about your kids and their kids after them. They will thank you. The people who will thank you, you'll never meet them. Go get your stuff digitized, hand digitized by the wonderful people, my friends at Legacy Box. Legacybox.com/Jesse. Get the box, fill it up, they'll digitize it. Legacybox.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Truth. Attitude. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, talking some Andersonville history tonight. Remember, you can email the show, love, hate, death threats, whatever you'd like. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. I haven't decided what's going to be next after this one, at least as far as history goes. We'll get back to politics in just a little bit. So Richmond, Virginia is the capital of the South during the Civil War, and they are having a problem, you see. All these battles are popping up. The South doesn't have the industry. They don't have the stuff they need, not just for the troops, for their own civilians. As I mentioned, logistics is not sexy, but it is important. The people who live in Virginia, the people who live around Richmond, they don't have enough stuff. And what they're encountering is there are lots and lots of POWs from the North held in camps around Richmond, and they're hoovering up all the food. I heard a bunch of different estimates. I've been doing so much reading and studying things on this. I heard 1 in 5. I heard 1 in 10, whatever the number is, 1 in 5 or 1 in 10 people around Richmond was a Union POW at one point in time. That's 10 to 20% of the population you're trying to feed. There's not enough food already. Not enough food for the civilians. Plus, you're really close to the North. You're close to the Northern lines. They're worried about these POWs escaping. There being a rebellion. What if the Union frees these camps? Okay, so we got to move them. We have to move them south. Now, there's another part of the reason they had to move them. And that was, it's known as the Dix Hill system. The Dix Hill exchange system, you could also call it. It was one Union guy and one Confederate guy. And what they had was a prisoner exchange system they had established. It's actually really fascinating. I took a huge nerdy deep dive into it, which I won't get into with you because you would hate me for it. But it essentially came down to this. Hey, let's understand. Hopefully we're going to come together after this. Let's understand we want to exchange troops. Let's come up with a value for every type of soldier based on their rank, and from time to time, let's do an exchange. Now, when I say a value, I mean this. The officers are going to be worth more in that value system than an enlisted man. You know, a general is going to be worth more than a private. So let's say a general is worth 150 points and a private's worth 5 points. Okay, well, you go find me 10 privates. Or wait, that wouldn't be right. It's more than 10, Chris. 10, 5. Go find me 30 privates. That adds up to 150. I'll give you your general back. You give me, you see what I mean, a prisoner exchange system. They had different locations for the prison exchange system where I show up with my guys, you show up with your guys. There's a representative from each time we exchange prisoners. Okay, we're good to go. You got it. Prisoner exchange system. It broke down. It broke down for several different reasons. One of the main ones is they begin to lie. Each side began to lie. Because you're trying to fudge the values, fudge the numbers, if you will, so you can get more valuable people back and not give them valuable people. So that's a big part of it. Another part of it was the North had black people in its army. The South obviously did not. The South did not treat black POWs as if they were POWs. They essentially treated them like they were escapees. It treated them like they were property. They would just flat out kill them. That angered the North. And those are the reasons you mainly read. But there is one reason above all. The decision was made to essentially shut down the prison exchange system. And none of the good reasons they try to give you are as cold and calculating as the real reason the prison exchange system shut down. The real reason was this. Lincoln, or Ulysses S. Grant, depending on who you believe, the North shut down the prison exchange system because the North had more men. The North had more men than the South. So if we simply stop exchanging people, even if every one of our Union soldiers die in Southern captivity, we can replace them. You can't replace your men. Think about the World War II comparison we made. If Japan has 3 aircraft carriers and can't replace them, if America has 3 and can replace them, and let's say they're captured by the other side, America would probably say, well, keep our aircraft carriers. I don't care. You can't build more. That same system happened. And so, again, it was either Abe Lincoln. The sources are all weird. It was either Abe Lincoln or Ulysses S. Grant, depending on who you believe. Everyone has a different opinion. But the North shut down the prison exchange system. There's no more Dix Hill prison exchange system. You, South, we are keeping all your prisoners. And guess what? You can keep ours. We will outlast you. We have more men. We have more stuff. Best of luck to you. So now the South has to figure out what to do, because it's not like you just have the men you currently have. The South is still winning battles. The South is still taking in prisoners. What to do? What to do? They found a big spot in Georgia and decided this was going to be their spot. And now we have to go to hell, known as Andersonville. Before we go there, working with terrible people is hell, isn't it? Showing up at work, who's that guy? Who's that girl who works for you that makes you wince every time you see them or they walk in your office because you know it's going to be a problem? They're going to have some drama. It's awful, isn't it? Awful. And you don't think you can fire them because it's so hard to find good people. It's not hard anymore. Get rid of that person. ZipRecruiter is here to bring you somebody so much better. It is the hiring site employers prefer the most because it's the hiring site employees prefer the most. That person you're looking for, the one to take your company to the next level, they're already at ZipRecruiter. They're waiting for you to show up. They're already sitting there at the dinner table. You're the one that needs to walk in the door. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Jesse and sign up. You'll meet him tomorrow. How's that sound? Tomorrow, they'll have you matched with people. ZipRecruiter.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Wednesday, a hump day. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. So, the South, it's 1863. They have too many Union prisoners. The Union won't exchange them anymore because they know they have more men. In the end, they win. The prisoners around Richmond are eating up all the food. The residents are upset. The prisoners are too close to the northern lines. And so they find a place outside of a small town in Georgia called Andersonville. And they think to themselves, well, this is where we'll put them all. Now, I can't stress how terrible the supply situation was for the South at this time when they began construction of the Andersonville prison camp. The troops themselves were not getting enough food, blankets, clothing, that the South didn't have enough stuff. Without another major nation partnering with the South was never going to win the Civil War. It simply was not possible logistically for them to do so. Try as they may, valiant as they may have fought, they were never going to win this war. And now the stuff situation is getting worse and worse and worse. They start building this camp. At first, they just put a big wall. The camp is shaped like a rectangle, and some of this stuff is going to be really, really important, so you're going to have to pay attention to it. The camp is shaped like it's a big rectangle, okay? It's in essentially a big open field. There's a slope to it. There is. You can go look at it to this day. In fact, there's a million YouTube videos on it. You can go look at exactly what I'm talking about. But picture a big open field in Georgia surrounded by woods, and they just start building a wall. A wall without anything in it. There's a place for the camp guards and such to sleep, but everything else is just a big open field. And some of this is going to get gross. I'm sorry, but I have to describe what our Americans have gone through. There was a stream going through the camp. You know the long side of the rectangle and the short side of the rectangle? The short lines on the rectangle, the stream paralleled the short lines, and it divided the camp into a little stream. The camp is half built in February of 1864, but the South can't wait any longer. They began to start shuttling prisoners into this camp. There is a train station nearby. They show up on the trains. They bring them into the camp. Already, we have a humanitarian nightmare on our hands. As I just said, there's no quarters. There's no barracks. There's nothing but a field. This place was designed to hold 10,000 troops. At its peak, it held 33,000 troops. 33,000 troops with no cover, no facilities, no nothing, herded in like cattle to a fenced-in open field in Georgia. In Georgia, I don't know if you know this, it gets really, really hot. It gets really, really cold. It's not just that they don't have a roof over their heads. They don't have the proper clothing. And remember, we talked about how the troops and the civilians weren't eating well. Like, here's the thing about prisons, and this is true today. What are the worst prisons in the world today? They're from poor countries. Why? Well, when you don't have the money to create a decent prison, decent beds, decent food, a poor country's not going to take its limited resources and put any of those resources into prisons and prisoners. They're simply going to build cages and toss them whatever scraps of food they happen to have left. The worst prisons are poor prisons. What we're dealing with here is logistically an unbelievably poor country in the South. They don't have enough food. Our guys don't have housing. They don't have clothes. and they get a tiny, minuscule amount of food every day. It essentially amounts to a little bit of salt in cornmeal, but most of the time, they couldn't even cook the cornmeal into a cake or something because firewood was also forbidden in Andersonville. They didn't want prisoners starting fires and escaping. Now, let's get gross. The stream. 33,000 men. One stream. One stream in order to get water for yourself, bathe, that is important. You have to clean your body. Laundry, remember, we don't have changes of clothes. You better get naked at some point in time, clean your clothes. One stream to use as a bathroom. Now pause for a moment. This is one of those things that is really, really gross, and it's about to be a little gross. I'm sorry, but we do have to discuss it. It's the least sexy part of war. Bathroom waste. What do you do with it? It's one of the things America is so good at because we've spent so many years studying it in logistics and whatnot. I remember one of the first things we did when we were in Iraq and we left Baghdad and we went to some tiny dump of a town called Najaf. We seized control of a walled-in farmer's market they had. And it was day one, immediately, where are we using the bathroom? Build bathroom facilities over there. Now, they weren't nice, don't get me wrong. It wasn't flushable toilets or anything like that. But let's immediately designate a place because we have to isolate the waste where all that disease and bacteria grows. If you are in a big fenced-in camp without flushable toilets, there's no indoor plumbing, you have to use the stream as essentially your flushable toilet. When you use the bathroom, you have to use it into the stream so all that bacteria fodder flows out and away from you. Well, that's a problem. But look, this is the military. We have adult men in there, men in charge. The prisoners, so they knew they had to come up with a system, obviously. And the system it's a pretty obvious system, one you've probably figured out for yourself. Let's go as far upstream as we can. That is where we will pull the water out to drink, right? That's where we'll pull it out to drink. The next system down, that's where we will clean ourselves. The next system down, that's where we will clean our clothes. And then as far downstream as you can possibly get in the camp, that's where we will use the stream as a toilet. They weren't morons. They knew what they were doing. They understood that's how it had to be set up. And in fact, they constructed for themselves what essentially is a wooden wall system along the stream. You can go look it up, by the way, if you'd like to right now. You'll see men washing their clothes and men sitting over the wall going poopy in the stream. You can go look at a picture of it to this day. In Andersonville, they had a system set up. But I want to again stress, it was a system designed for 10,000 men, not 33,000 men. And there was a flaw in the stream system the Union troops could not possibly hold or could not possibly help. We'll discuss those two things. Before we discuss those two things, let's discuss nutrition because that's going to come into play here in a moment too. Do you get everything your body needs from what you eat? Let me go ahead and spoil it for you. No, because most people don't. When I tell you about a male vitality stack from Chalk, or a female vitality stack, depending on who you are. I usually talk about energy and focus and things like that, but Chalk Daily is part of that stack. No matter what, even if you don't get a male vitality stack or a female vitality stack, you should be having a Chalk Daily every single day. Remember, these are natural nutritional supplements of the highest quality from the hardcore anti-communists at Chalk. You know that you will see a difference in your life, in your body, and your fingernails, in your energy. Just Chalk Daily. Go get a subscription. Get some Chalk Daily. C-H-O-Q, chalk.com/Jesse. Get a Chalk Daily subscription. Let them deliver it to you. You'll thank me for it. Chalk.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Truth. Attitude. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Wednesday. A hump day. Doing a little history right now. We'll get back to politics here. I would guess 10 minutes. Hopefully I'll finish this up 10 to 20 minutes. And then we'll get back to more politics, talking about Andersonville POW camp. Essentially, it was known as Camp Sumter. We call it Andersonville in the South in World War II. The camp is supposed to be 10,000 men, expands to 33,000. The South, they do bring in some more resources for the camp as far as wood and materials go, but materials are rare, and they only use the materials to expand the wall system. Now, I mentioned the stream, and I mentioned the diet. Human beings, we talk about this all the time when we talk about our own nutrition. When I tell you about chalk, when I tell you about rough greens for your dog, you have to have things. You need things. Your body has to have certain vitamins and minerals. Your diet, you have to have them in there. And if you don't, you will begin to see physical evidence of it. Scurvy. Have you ever heard of scurvy? It's awful. Your gums swell up. Your teeth fall out. Your mouth bleeds. Why do you get that? You don't get vitamin C. It was one of the big struggles of oceanic explorers, guys who got on those old sailing ships. How do you keep fruit good long enough so we can get vitamin C in our diet? They may not have known everything we know about medicine, but they knew without fruit, the clock is ticking. We will get sick and die. Scurvy. Scurvy becomes everywhere. It spreads like wildfire in Andersonville. Another thing that starts to spread like wildfire is disease. Several different kinds, but for our purposes here, I hope you're not eating. We're going to discuss dysentery. Now, I've had dysentery. It's one of the two parasites I've had. I know that you know what it's like to be physically sick in a way where you have to use the toilet. Okay, I'll just put it that way. I know you know what that's like. Everyone knows what that's like. Everyone's had a bad chili dog, right? I know you know what that's like. I can't stress to you enough when I tell you that is not what dysentery is like. If you took a little midget and you shrunk him down even more, so he's a 4-inch tall midget, and you gave him two gigantic swords and then swallowed him. Imagine that little midget jamming his swords into your gut. That's what dysentery feels like. And when it's time to go, it's not a hold out for 5 minute type thing. You are in physical agony and you better be at the toilet or it's going to be a problem. And it's not a one-off where normally when you get sick in that way, you get sick. And even if you're super sick, you've got 20 minutes, half hour before you have to worry about it again. You'll go 5 minutes later, go again, 5 minutes later, go again. You can't stop. Now, what else it's doing on top of sucking nutrients out of your body, it's sucking water out of your body and it's contagious. 33,000 men. You can't get to the stream every time you have to go when there's 33,000 men. And even if by the grace of God you manage to get to the stream, it's not possible for you to locate the exact spot on the stream where you're supposed to go. I had to describe it because I wanted to drive this point home. You're going no matter what. You are going. Stream, not stream, whatever you're doing, you are going. The midget's stabbing you. You are going. What the men describe, all of them, when they arrive in Andersonville, the new Andersonville POWs, all of them, every single thing I read was smell. Andersonville became, oh my gosh, I have the screamies just thinking about it. Andersonville became a mud bog, not of mud. Could you imagine what it would be like to live in a mud bog of diarrhea? On top of the disgustingness of that, the smell of that, the disease that would spread, you're not getting nutrition, you're not getting water. Now the water you have is already bad. And oh, I meant to mention to you, you know how they had set up that system where the clean water is on one side and then the laundry and then the toilet? The Confederate Army, they set up a camp upstream and they were using the stream the same way. So even where you thought you were getting clean drinking water, you were still getting the toilet residue from the Confederate camp that was up the way. Do you want to hear a jaw-dropping stat before we try to wrap this thing up? We've talked many times about the Japanese in World War II and their unimaginable cruelty, especially to POWs. Most people know, some don't, that if you were an American and you were captured by the Nazis, there was very little cruelty, believe it or not. You were treated quite well. 2% death rate. They fed you, clothed you, you were warm. Our allied POWs were treated quite well in Europe. In Japan, you know what the death rate was? 26%. A quarter of them who went in there died. You know what the death rate was in Andersonville? 29. Andersonville had a death rate that exceeded Japanese POW camps in World War II, men dying in droves. A third of them gone. The disease was terrible. And then that brings us to maybe the worst part of this whole thing, and it really might be, and I swear I'll try to wrap this up next. What happens when men become desperate? Desperate from disease, desperate from hunger, even your disciplined military men with unity. What happens when men become desperate enough? We will talk about that as we wrap this up in a moment. Now, all this talk of vitamins and minerals and digestive issues hopefully has you thinking about rough greens. You know, your dog needs those things too. Maybe you don't look at your dog and think, well, his coat is dull because you're with your dog every day, but your dog's coat is dull because your dog doesn't get nutrition. Your dog does not get nutrition from dog food. Unless you are finding a way to get real nutrition into your dog essentially eats fast food every meal. Empty calories. Sprinkle Rough Greens on your dog's food so your dog can live longer, so your dog can be healthier. How much money did you spend the last time you had to take him to the vet? What if you didn't have to go as often? That's something else you'll notice when you start giving your dog nutrition. Rough Greens is America's number one dog supplement for a reason. People are believers across this country, as I am. Fred gets it with every single meal. Go to roughgreens.com, get a free jumpstart trial bag, or call them 214-ROUGH-DOG. Just use the promo code Jesse. They'll send you a free jumpstart trial bag. We'll try to wrap up Andersonville. Next.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.